Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, September 9, 2022. The French medical charity MSF says its trucks carrying relief items were looted in Sudan.
Two unknown young men blocked the road for our last pickup trucks and other bystanders and cars passing by. They joined the discussion and started looting the items loaded on the pickup trucks. The people who took the items expressed a dire need for humanitarian assistance.
And the UN mission in South Sudan is calling on armed groups in Upper Nile State to give peace a chance.
This latest attack also triggered violent intercommunal clashes among some internally displaced people of different groups within the UNMISS Protection of Civilians site, where UNMISS personnel responded quickly to restore order and provide robust security on site.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Officials with the French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, say four trucks carrying humanitarian aid for communities affected by floods in Al Jazeera State were stopped and looted by unidentified individuals who were not armed. Health officials in Al Managil say the situation of internally displaced persons is dire. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
MSF Field Communication Manager in Sudan, Nergis Kosho Ibekova, says four of the seven MSF trucks loaded with kits, mosquito nets, blankets, plastic sheets, mats, kitchen pots, and buckets were looted by unknown individuals between Managil town and Al Jamuzi village. Nergis says the looters seems to be in desperate need of assistance.
Two unknown young men blocked the road for our last pickup trucks and other bystanders and cars passing by. They joined the discussion and started looting the items loaded on the pickup trucks. The people who took the items expressed a dire need for humanitarian assistance.
The Sudanese government's Humanitarian Aid Commission says heavy rains and flash floods have affected about 279,000 people since June, which have destroyed thousands of homes in 16 out of 18 states. Nergis says MSF will continue to respond to the needs of families in flooded areas.
About 20,000 families from 100 villages are affected by the heavy floods in Al Jazeera State. MSF is working together with the Ministry of Health and is constructing temporary latrines, installing water tanks and distribution systems for provision of clean water.
Nergis says the looted items were meant for about 200 families affected by flood waters in Al Jamuzi village. Authorities in Al Jazeera State condemned the incident and ordered security escorts for any humanitarian convoy carrying relief items for families affected by floods. Speaking by phone from Al Managil town, Dr. Nahla Abdulmunem Hussein, head of the Health and Emergency Committee in Managil locality, says the situation in various camps is still there. Dr. Abdulmunem says outbreaks of malaria and other infectious diseases have been on the rise among children.
We have recorded cases of watery diarrhea among the children, but it has not reached a cholera outbreak stage. We also have cases of scorpion and snake bites, but up to now, no one has died. We are also facing difficulty accessing other camps outside Managil due to bad roads.
Dr. Abdulmunem says aid agencies who are helping the affected communities need additional security to carry out their work. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still on humanitarian issues, the humanitarian coordinator for South Sudan, Sarah Beslow-Nyati, says fighting between armed factions in Tonga town and neighboring areas has displaced thousands of people in Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Unity State. Nyati says this week's violence led to civilian deaths, injuries, and further displacement. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Sarah Beslow-Nyati, the Deputy Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General in South Sudan, who also serves as Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, says she is deeply concerned by the latest round of violence in Upper Nile State and its consequences on civilians. The UN diplomat says since mid-August, thousands of people have been displaced across many areas of Upper Nile, Jonglei and Unity states following heavy fighting between armed factions in Tonga town and neighboring areas in Panyikang County of Upper Nile State. Nyanti said she was in Adidiang a week ago and was, in her words, devastated that women, children and elderly people she met have suffered further violence and trauma. This kind of violence in an area hosting displaced civilians is unconscionable. Nyanti said, adding that all parties need to remember their obligations under international law and ensure civilians are protected, no matter where they are, end quote. The United Nations mission in South Sudan also condemned the attacks by armed groups who attacked persons seeking refuge at the Adidiang Island site, located about 40 kilometers south of the state capital, Malakal. UNMISS spokesperson Linda Tom says a number of civilians fleeing the violence might have drowned in the Nile River, adding that up to 5,000 civilians had fled to the site last month after deadly fighting between rival armed groups in Tonga village west of Malakal.
This latest attack also triggered violent intercommunal clashes among some internally displaced people of different groups within the UNMISS Protection of Civilians site, where UNMISS personnel responded quickly to restore order and provide robust security on site.
Nyanti says as traumatized civilians start arriving in Malakal, humanitarian partners believe up to 5,000 people could arrive in the coming days seeking protection and assistance at the POC site. She says humanitarians have quickly mobilized available resources and are working to provide life-saving assistance to meet urgent needs. Tom says UN peacekeepers have been deployed to rescue drowning civilians and provide protection for the affected populations. She says the mission also is engaging all stakeholders concerned, including armed parties, authorities, and local communities to enable a timely response.
UNMISS calls on the attackers to immediately cease hostilities and refrain from harming vulnerable civilians and internally displaced people. The mission is also calling on the state and national authorities to intervene urgently to de-escalate the situation and protect civilian lives.
OCHA says some 6.8 million people in South Sudan need urgent life-saving assistance and protection this year. Nyanti says South Sudan continues to be the most violent country for aid workers, followed by Afghanistan and Syria. She says five humanitarian workers have been killed in the line of duty since the beginning of 2022 and that aid workers, mostly nationals, are affected by the impact of armed violence, bureaucratic impediments and targeted violence across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The Global Coalition to Protect Education from Attacks say there were 11 reported incidents of attacks on schools in South Sudan between 2021 to 2022. The report says the number of reported attacks declined slightly compared to previous years, leading to the destruction of buildings in parts of South Sudan. A government spokesperson denies the army has occupied schools during this specified period. For VOA News, Sheila Pony has more from Juba.
According to the Global Coalition to Protect Education from Attack, there were three documented attacks on schools in 2020. The coalition's report says in August 2020, unidentified groups burnt down and plagued Salama Primary School in Yei County of Central Equatorial State. The coalition says it gathered eight incident reports of attacks on schools from media, the United Nations and NGOs in 2021. The report accused an armed group of looting Leech Primary School in the Rupkona internally displaced persons camp in Unity State, stealing learning materials and damaging six classrooms. The report also states that government forces continue to occupy a number of South Sudanese schools. The United Nations agency UNICEF deputy representative for South Sudan, Jesta Moller, says the government of South Sudan should remove its soldiers from school so that children can obtain a better learning environment.
Children and adolescents need to live their lives within a protective environment, in families, in communities, but importantly also in schools. We must work together to build a protective environment for every child across South Sudan so that their childhood offers them an opportunity to reach their full potential.
Mula says the South Sudan government signed a safe school declaration in 2015 as a commitment to ensure that learning places are protected during conflicts.
However, there are continuous reports that schools are occupied, vandalized by armed forces, by armed groups. So we do encourage that the media also help to identify such issues and supports efforts to report on such instances, and thereby reinforcing the importance of the role of government obligations and the government's commitment to help protect children in schools.
The Safe Schools Declaration is an intergovernmental political commitment that was made available for country endorsement at an international conference held in Oslo, Norway in May 2015. Government spokesperson Michael Makwe insists Army is not occupying a single school. He says the Army still uses some schools in areas with low population of adults without children or places where there are no teachers.
This did not happen. What happened is in the course of displacement, and most of these places, these areas which are not vacated up to now, are vacated simply because of the absence of the population in that area. And when the army evacuates such a school, the rebels will come and occupy them. So the best thing is to maintain them, keep the army there so that the few population which is there is continue to be protected, even though with all these populations, sometimes most of them are staying without children to go to schools. And if there are any children, there are no teachers to go and teach them.
Mola says under the declaration, government are responsible for protecting students, teachers and schools during times of armed conflict.
In accordance with the Convention on the Rights of the Child, governments are the primary duty bearers of responsible for the attainment of children's rights. It is incumbent upon governments to establish systems to ensure justice and to allow for access to basic social services for all children.
Makwe says he has yet to hear that the army has refused to vacate school buildings in South Sudan.
There are a lot of reports, yes. There are reports that the army is occupying such barracks, it is occupying such schools, it is occupying such a compound. And instead of just writing like that, why don't you go and find out exactly for yourself? Why is that commander not evacuating that school so that children go to school? Go and find out, are there really any children there who are eligible to go to that school? Is there any population around there? These are some of the things that we need to do.
Makwe insists that any talk of action plans regarding children's protection must be South Sudanese-oriented because South Sudanese have their own culture norms.
We must encourage them and even tell the world that is what we are. It is only this war that has interrupted our social fabric. But in the past, we never had children in the streets. These are children in the streets. We never had that type of children because our norms in all our communities is that everybody is duty-bound to take care of a child who has no parents. Once a child loses her parents, it is the duty of her uncle, of their uncle, being paternal or maternal. If there is nobody at all, it is the duty of the chief to make sure that he takes care of their child. And this is what had been happening. Some of the orphans were brought up by chiefs without their parents and they have now become responsible people. Why don't we go back to that system, to our old system?
A child protection specialist with UNICEF says the agency will not release the locations of the schools where government forces have occupied the structures for security reasons. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi in Juba.
Britain's Queen Elizabeth II has died at the age of 96 at her residence in Scotland. She was Britain's longest-serving monarch and this year celebrated 70 years on the throne. Henry Ridgewell looks back on the life of one of the world's most respected heads of state.
Queen Elizabeth II was the only monarch many of the British people alive today have ever known, a symbol of her nation, its empire and its Commonwealth. She personified British strength and character long before she even knew she would be queen.
I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong.
In 1947, on her 21st birthday, she gave a televised address on her first overseas tour in South Africa. That same year, she married the Greek-born Prince Philip. At 25, Elizabeth ascended to the throne after the death of her father, George VI. She saw a thorough transformation of society and technology during her reign of more than 7 decades, a time in which she warned about the dangers of throwing away ageless ideals while embracing the advantages of new inventions. She sent out her first tweet in 2014. There are few records she did not break. She was the world's longest reigning monarch. Author and royal analyst Richard Fitzwilliams.
As head of the Commonwealth, the Queen has links with the past. Sometimes it's a past that's difficult to come to terms with because you think of empire, you think of colonial exploitation, for example. But so far as the Queen is concerned, you think of her dedication to the organisation.
She represented Britain in friendships with those who held in common the British values of freedom, equality and democracy. And with dignity, she faced those who did not. The Queen was not immune to criticism in her own country. Some targeted her as a symbol of an institution out of place in a postmodern, neoliberal and democratic world and a burden on the British taxpayer. The death of the popular Princess Diana was an opportunity for her critics, who accused her of being coldly slow to react. When she did address the nation, it was heartfelt.
What I say to you now, as your queen and as a grandmother, I say from my heart. First, I want to pay tribute to Diana myself. She was an exceptional and gifted human being.
The marriage of her grandson, Prince William, to Kate Middleton brought youthful glamour to the ancient institution. When Prince Harry married American actor Meghan Markle, Elizabeth was at the head of a family that appeared to move with the times, popular, diverse and global. But there were painful times ahead. Her second son, Prince Andrew, was investigated for links to a convicted child sex offender. Harry and Meghan fell out with the royal family amid accusations of racism. The passing of Elizabeth's husband, Prince Philip, in 2021 left an enduring image, a queen mourning alone as the coronavirus pandemic swept across her nation. In September, she appointed the 15th Prime Minister of her reign, her last major public engagement. Queen Elizabeth remains a giant in the history of one of the planet's great nations, a bridge between Britain's colonial past and its future as a global player in a world vastly different from the one she was born in. Visiting Germany in 2015, she spoke of the vast changes she had witnessed.
In our lives, Mr. President, we have seen the worst, but also the best of our continent. We have witnessed how quickly things can change for the better. But we know that we must work hard to maintain the benefits of the post-war world.
Britain's royal tradition, of which Elizabeth was a steward, is now in the hands of her heirs as Charles prepares to ascend to the throne. The Britain they inherit is a drastically different one in terms of demographics, culture and economics. In a globalised, pluralistic world, their job of projecting an image of greatness is no less complicated. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
In Kenya, President-elect William Ruto's Kenya Kwanza coalition has taken control of both the Senate and National Assembly. This after the Azimio Umoja coalition opted out of the race, leaving Ruto's team to thrive. Wiper Party leader Kalonzo Musyoka, who was contesting for the post of Senate Speaker, changed his mind at the 11th hour in a letter addressed to the Senate clerk. For VOA News, Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
After the swearing-in ceremony for both the senators and members of parliament, it was time to elect the speakers. During the exercise, Azimio la Umoja One Kenya Coalition members raised concerns, among them nominated members not being allowed to participate in the exercise citing discrimination. Efforts from the members to have the Senate speaker election postponed were futile. At the same time, the Senate clerk received a letter from the leader of the Wiper Democratic Party, Kalonzo Musyoka, asking to withdraw from the race. Homa Bay Senator Moses Kajwang and other leaders led the Azimio team to walk out of the House as they raised concerns over the lack of integrity.
Join the House to allow the nominated senators to put in their applications, and the clerk has dismissed us on a technicality. And we thought that that was not fair, and we felt that all senators are equal. There is no way that the position of Deputy Speaker can then be reserved through trickery for only the elected senators at the exclusion of nominated senators. Number two, we have also raised issues around the integrity of some of the candidates who presented themselves.
Musyoka, who was contesting against the former Kilifi Governor Emmerson Kingi, did not give clear reasons for opting out. Speaking after the swearing-in, King said he will lead the team without discrimination.
Honourable Senators, I'm profoundly humbled and overwhelmed by the great honour and privilege you have bestowed upon me by electing me as the Speaker, as your Speaker, of the 4th Senate and the 13th Parliament of the Republic of Kenya.
At the same time, former Bungoma Senator Moses Wetangula sailed through to clinch the National Assembly Speaker seat. This as the former Speaker Kenneth Marende withdrew from the race after Wetangula beat him in the first round of voting. However, none of them met the threshold, forcing them to go for the second round, where Wetangula was declared the winner after Marende informed the clerk that he had conceded defeat.
I, Moses Francis Masika Wetangula, having been elected as Speaker of the National Assembly, do swear in the name of the Almighty God that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the people and the Republic of Kenya, that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge my duties as Speaker of the National Assembly.
It was a battle that has ended in favor of President-elect William Ruto, as now he has control of all the houses. It's a wrap-up for the election period in Kenya, as Ruto is expected to be sworn in on Tuesday 13th as the fifth president of Kenya. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Odhiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Many of you weighed in this week about the passing of Queen Elizabeth and President Salva Kiir's speech in Jongula Estate at John Garang Memorial University, such as Mal Adao Mal in Bortown, who writes, "Hello, VOA, I concur with President Kiir on peaceful coexistence, not only in Jongule, but also the entire country, to pave the way for developmental projects. Take the case of the current situation in Unity in Upper Nile States. It's very fragile, in which no effective learning can take place. Meanwhile, I appeal to the President to permit this university in Bor to offer health and medical courses." Ayen Yang Dao in Jebel Lemun says, "The inauguration of the lecture halls in Dr. John Garang Memorial University is welcome news, and it will create more learning space for the students. I urge the government to invest more in the education sector to boost learning in the country." Daniel Dundakbai from Rakmajok in Lake State says, "Hello, VOA. The money used to construct 10 lecture halls at Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology has never gone in vain. This money was spent on necessary projects that will create conducive atmosphere for learning. This is the South Sudan we need to see and be proud of. I need our government to keep on supporting public universities such that the quest for better education in neighboring countries may cease a bit." Dun Majong Kurwai from Rumbek says, Hello, VOA. Congratulations to Vice Chancellor of Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology and Professor Abraham Matoj for building 10 lecture halls to provide a conducive learning environment. Martin Manuel Wugol in Numuli writes, hello, John and Nabil. The historical visit of His Excellency the President to Jongole State after graduation of Unified Forces is a reaffirmation of true peace returning to the motherland. However, such historic state visits should continue to go on for citizens in the 10 states and 3 administrative areas to hear first-hand information from the President directly. Saber Aiza Khamis in Yambio of Western Equatoria State says, hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Allow me to extend my sincere, heartfelt condolences to the people of Britain for the loss of their Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth. Queen Elizabeth was a great and true African friend. She will be missed. May her soul rest in peace. Martin Manuel Wugol in South Sudan writes, hello, Nabil and John. Kindly convey my heartfelt condolences to the immediate family of Queen Elizabeth II, the UK's monarch for the past 70 years. Her untimely death is a major loss to people of the world. May the passing of Her Majesty the Queen at the age of 96 be a blessing upon humanity. Rest in peace. Amen. Mabor Alatrengo in Rombek Lake State says, hello, VOA. The sad death of Queen Elizabeth yesterday afternoon surprised the whole world. Queen Elizabeth had served for 70 years, which made her the longest-serving queen in the world. Her legacy will be remembered mostly by Commonwealth countries. I remember her when she visited Uganda in 2007. May her precious soul rest in peace. Peter Gony Anyang Majongdul in Block 3, Bortown says, as the Kenyan Assembly is conducting their first sitting this week, I congratulate all Kenyans for showing true definition of democracy and political maturity to the world following Monday's court ruling. I wish other African countries will learn from Kenyan politics. Thomas Yen Imthar Chath of Koch County in Unity State says, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I am one of your listeners. I like to listen to VOA because it provides credible and trusted news in English. Emmanuel Wani from Numuli writes, I am so glad to hear the release of secondary school results after long awaiting. I am urging the Minister of General Education to make marking and release of results quick. However, education standards of the country need improvement in the training of teachers. I am happy to see schools pave the way forward for high education level. Sunday from the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement in northwestern Uganda says, I am so disappointed with the extension of RT Gono up to February 2025. Our leaders are buying their time to push with automatic elections in South Sudan. And finally, Guya Moses John, also a South Sudanese refugee living in Bidibidi, says, hi, VOA News. It was a good move taken by the government of South Sudan to graduate the Unified Forces, but please, Mr. Kiir, increase the salaries and pay the soldiers on time for the soldiers not to commit robbery on civilians in the country. The opinion expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from so many of you. Keep those comments coming.
Keep your comments brief and we shall sample some of them on Fridays. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. And for world news, go to voanews.com. If you missed this broadcast, go to voanews.com/South Sudan. When I leave you with CJ Oman and the song Junubia.
CJ Oman. Junubia. Hey. Junubia. Neligo pini a kisim tok yafa. Neligo pini a lon tok yafa. Gopini azei malaika, ane tuguwe natai watako. Bini a kemili futuku. Junubia, ah ah oh oh, ah. Junubia, ah ah oh oh, ah. Junubia, ah ah.
We have been listening to CJ Oman and the song Junubia. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.